And this I have to turn on. Okay. Have another 30 seconds. We begin on time and good to be back. All right, we can begin. I'll say talk in Yonadi Yoma. Today is Sunday, January 15th, 2012. It's the first year I'm giving in the new general year according to Masechet Rosh Hashanah. We also mitchashev b'shanim shel melachim, so I can say 2012 has significance. I want to say hello to all those in front of me, and please close the door. I want to say hello to all those in front of me and to the many listening across the large universe. I want to thank you very much for all the divrei nechama for my late mother, and I greatly appreciate it, and it was very moving for me, not for my sister-in-law, because the phone never stopped ringing where we were sitting shiva from 6:30 a.m. till 10:30 p.m., but it was very moving to me to also receive calls and emails from individuals whom I never met and just felt part of my sorrow being my students via the magic of the modern world. I greatly appreciate it. I was rebuked by the person in charge of recordings for YU why we didn't record the Hesped he wanted to put on the YU website. All right, maybe at a later date I'll redo the Hesped, but this.
I got some of it.
Yeah, so give it to Rob, or maybe we redo it all together. Let me hear what you have, and I'll see. But I just want to mention, everyone comforts me that my mother did achieve a beautiful age of 98, although I began my Hesped by saying, Mom, you disappointed us. We all thought you would make 100. On the other hand, there's another side to that coin. Namely, I've had a mother for 74 years, and I've sort of grown accustomed to having a mother, and particularly from the day my parents came in Aliyah in 77, I used to visit my parents every day, basically. And I just want to correct one student, Rabbi Noach Chessis, who sent me an email how he was moved by my kibbutz aviyim that I visited my mother once a week when he was my Talmud. What once a week? Once a day, not once a week. Once a week is nothing with nothing. Okay, I mean, there's a lot to talk about a person's life, and even today is a sad day. Those of you who knew Rabbi Israel Pulayev, it was Rabbi Moshe Aaron Pulayev's son. He was a little older than I was. I believe the funeral is now, if I'm not mistaken. It was this afternoon, and Rabbi Israel Pulayev, one of the sweetest, sincerest, I apologize to the son, but I have no other word, an elecha mensch. Do you know what that, an elecha mensch? I don't have another word to describe him. And let it be said that I dedicate today's shir both to my mother's memory and to Rabbi Israel Pulayev's memory. Now, everyone wants me and bothering me to comment on in Yonadi Yoma what's going on. I want to teach today, but I do want to say a few words so no one should fault me for being silent. And essentially, you see, what we're doing here are two concepts of how a Jew has to live. And I feel very strongly that the Torah was given for us to live in the big world. As far as my understanding of Torah goes, a Nazir brings a Korban Chatat. And being a Nazir is not the ideal. And I remember we once asked Rebbe, and when I say Rebbe, I mean Maria Rebbe Hamufak, or Rebbe Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik Zitzal. We once asked Rebbe, so why is there a concept of a Nazir? If the Torah tells us he's wrong, you have to bring a Korban Chatat. So Rebbe said so beautifully that what the Torah is telling us, that everyone has to have a share in Torah. And not everyone can be totally within the mainstream. And there are people, and I've been a Rebbe for 53 years, I'm very proud of the fact that I've met many students over the years who are not mainstream people, who had difficulties in life and personality difficulties. And I meet them 30, 40, 50 years later, they hug me, they kiss me, because I related to them in their world. So it could be that there are people who feel a need to run away to the desert, run away from wine and the joys of life, and to be ecstatic. So the Torah gives them a way to do it, but that's not the ideal. And to my concept of Torah life, and I believe I reflect my Rebbe very adequately, and I believe I reflect Reb Moshe Feinstein and the Gedolim that I knew intimately, Torah is made to live in the real world. And when you ask me about separate seating on buses, I'm totally, absolutely, completely opposed. I'm not going to answer like one of my colleagues did, to have women in separate seats. I'm quoting word by word, on the bus, not such a bad idea. And sitting next to them on the bus, half the time they're not dressed properly. And even when they are dressed properly, it's not such a bad idea to have a separate section. To me, that's not life. We have to train a person to live in a normal world. There are men and women in the world. And all these concepts, separate buses, then you have separate sidewalks. So I'm frightened, because this is making a statement that every male is a sex predator and every woman is a sex object. And this is frightening to me. And what's more frightening, with all these chumras, look into the world that observes these chumras, there are more sexual scandals that in my entire life I would never dream that we would have, as it's in all the newspapers, 89 sexual predator cases brewing in Greater Brooklyn, Lower Leno. I don't want to go further. I don't want to go further. Right here in Israel, it's reached the point, again, this happened to me twice already with grandchildren. There was a terrible scandal in Michlala. Recently, there was another scandal elsewhere. And my grandchildren say to me, Saba, what are you so upset about? At least it's a man and a woman. Oh, God have mercy if we've reached the stage in life where my grandchildren are comforting me because it's only a man and a woman and not lo aleinu. I can't even mention the word. When I was growing up, the word pedophile did not exist. It was not in the dictionary. I need not tell you that anyone who reads any newspaper today knows what a pedophile is. I just Saturday night, riding up in the elevator after Marav, so my neighbor's son was visiting, and another neighbor was there. We started talking about where they went to high school, and he told me the worst part of his life was his high school. It was then the premier yeshiva high school in Israel, Nativ Meir. But he said all the rabbeim were from the black world. We were from Bnei Akiva. They never understood us, and the biggest rebbe of all, you know, is behind bars, or maybe they let him out at the end of 7 years. I don't want to say what I would have done to him. I mean, God have mercy. Who could believe that religious Jews, that a Rebbe would do this to a Talmud? Where am I living? What's going on here? Now, and it's not only that. I want to tell you on another level. At the OU, and if Rabbi Rubin would tell me he saw this in print, I would not believe Rabbi Rubin, but I saw it in print with my own eyes that the OU before Pesach last year advised everyone to get a light box to check lettuce. I now saw about strawberries, you get a magnifying glass. I want to tell my dear students, if anyone speaks like this, they do not know what Torah is about. They are Mayaritz or Apikosim. Take your choice. According to that viewpoint, the Kohanim, and I trust you know Shas and Paiskim, the Kohanim would have to strip naked when they finished the Avod in the Beit HaMikdash. Big day kuna lab lehanot nitnu. Nu, what do we say? Lo nitnu Torah lemalachei hasharet. I'm not any smarter than the Sachtshava. I don't think anyone would call the Sachtshava Rebbe, the Avnei Nezer, that anyone would say one word in a negative fashion about him. And you know his famous tshuva 150 years ago, what you cannot see with the naked eye is not considered a sheretz. You're going to put water under the microscope. No, you'll stop drinking water. I don't have to tell you what's crawling around in that bottle of May Aiden. So I tell you, it's frightening to me, separate people from the world that I come from. There's separate sidewalks, separate buses, magnifying glasses. light boxes. Where are we going? And the Chilul Hashem Tzolei Shamayim. Today it was the leading article in today's New York Times, explaining a new word coined in Israeli Hebrew, Hadrat Nashim, that everyone in the world who speaks Hebrew, doesn't speak Hebrew, has to know what the word means. This is frightening. And you understand the left fell on this. We played right into their hands. You don't know the Israeli politics. Three parties are now running for the next election. Kadima, Avoda, and Lapid, Tommy Lapid's son. And what's their theme against the religious that are taking over the country? They're crazy. They're morons. They don't. It's Iran. It's Saudi Arabia. And we played right into the hands. And I want to tell you, they're running with it's going to run on a platform that, God have mercy, can very well attract the second generation Russians, who most of them are totally secular but right wing. And they're saying to them, forget about your being right-wing politically. You're going to have to save the country, or you're going to have to ride on a bus for men only and separate families and children and husbands and wife. I mean, think of the implications. This is not Torah. You're supposed to sit next to your wife. And Ribbono Shel Olam, a man has to learn, if we're sex animals, that if we're sitting next to a woman, all we think about is sex, God have mercy on all our Torah education. What good is it? There's life and death. Education means to choose life. And I have to tell you, what's most disturbing is, particularly from the world I come from, I can't criticize my dear Yosef Chaim, the wonderful Shemesh, because his world, boy, have they spoken out. Have you seen the Mashkiach on Vassar's knife? He makes me look like a sissy. That's all I can tell you. And he's been quoted widely, you should know, on many blogs now. But the world in which I come from, I was flabbergasted. The Litvisha Rashi Yeshiva, why don't they speak? Why don't you hear a word? And I was told, well, the students around them. And you heard what happened the week that this reached a crescendo. Rav Alyoshev supposedly signed. It turns out he never signed. He never saw it. They forged the signature. It was given to graphologists. It's a computer forgery. But four haramim in 1 week, one against going to the army, which is Reform Judaism, because every male is obligated to go to the army. It's an open Mishnah at the end of Sota. We have enough of a halachic problem justifying why we don't send women, because there's Ein Lecha Milchemet Mitzvah Yoteh Yidolam Mizu. We can only sit here at this moment because 250,000 boys and girls are out there protecting us, including including five great-grandchildren of my mother in active service at this moment in time. Then there'll be many more, and there were many already. Then there was a chayim against the core curriculum, raising kids who will be tragic figures without any knowledge of math, computer, English. How will they make a living? Then there was a chayim against Haredi colleges, including that of Rav Ovadia Yosef's daughter, that Chasa, these are colleges, Tour, Orlando, Machon Lev, Machon Tal, where we're separate men and women, separate floors, separate days, separate buildings, separate campuses. And then there was the chayim against Mishpacha. And I guess I sign on the chayim against Mishpacha, because my students approached them, why don't you interview Harav Rakefet? I mean, here's a man taught Torah 53 years, so many chidushim, seven svarim, and they double-talked. I told him, I said, what, are you crazy? The other people from YU whom they interviewed, they could paint, you know, a little bit Haredi. Rakefet, there's one tremendous problem. He is the greatest believer in Torah alive. And if you believe in Torah, religious Zionism is part of Torah, Ki Mitzayin, Totzei Torah, Devar Hashem, Yerushalayim. Go and put that guy into Bamishpacha. They would have put them in Chayrim months ago. But now I'm signing on the Chayrim because they didn't have the guts to interview Aaron Rakefet. So I want to end off. I want to end off with one vort that I heard many years ago, and I understand it, and it's if it was applicable then, it's certainly applicable today. And the Vada is a beautiful Vada. If you go to the end of Masechet Saita, there's a famous Mishnah that describes Yimot Yashiach, before Yimot Mashiach, Chutz B'Yazkeh. And one of the things the Mishnah says, Pinei Hadar Kibnei HaKelev. Now what does that mean? The generation will look like a dog? What does that mean? So Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman in the Ikvot of the Mashiachta that I quoted in the Monday class, quotes the Chafetz Chaim, and it's a meridic quote from the Chafetz Chaim, that when you see a dog, the dog walks in front of the master. Who's leading who? The dog is leading the master, or the master is leading the dog? Prima facie, when you just take a look, the dog is 5 steps ahead of the master, the owner. You think the dog is leading, but we all know it's the master who's leading the dog. So the Chafetz Chaim says in the generation before Mashiach, the leaders of the generation will be walking ahead of the generation, but they will only reflect the viewpoints of the masses that are behind them. It's like the leaders are on a string and they're not telling what should be told. They are reflecting what their Talmidim are telling him, what the Hardheads are telling him, what the Zalman of Satna is telling them. He just attacked the Belzer Rebbe because the Belzer Rebbe came out against beating the hell out of women who are sitting in the men's section and spitting at them and calling them prostitutes. God have mercy. And instead of the leaders being real leaders, they're no more than dogs walking in front of their masters. And this is exactly this generation. I hope that my students will not judge me on an ill basis, because I don't want to be led by masses who are jackasses. I want to walk ahead of the generation and speak out Devar Hashem Zu Halacha. And there's a lot more to say, but I've said enough. Take what I've said and multiply it. Now, it's very frightening to me. I've never lived through such a Chilul Hashem as this. One correction and something I mentioned, not really a correction, but more history from a person named Mark Wiener, who is sitting right here in this classroom, Rabbi Mark Wiener, United States military. What rank is that? Lieutenant Colonel? I'm reading correctly? Okay. Regarding the history of Teachers Institute, I started at YU in the James Stryer School, which was the beginner's program. It was earlier called the Jewish Studies Program. Teachers Institute was different. In my day, it was called Erna Michael College. I believe my cousin David Gleischer, who's also my student, was in it. It is now called the Isaac Breuer College. I can't keep track of all these names, but evidently there are 3 divisions to Yeshiva, and they subdivide, and I confused the Teachers Institute with the JSS program, as was known in my time. Don't confuse me with the facts. When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. But this is an important correction. Jay Schottenstein has done great things for YU, but I don't believe he ever went to Yeshiva College. And there I was wrong. I thought that Jay Schottenstein was a Yeshiva College graduate. I even remember him being active, at least I thought, in Yeshiva College alumni, but I value that correction. The other interesting point that came in comes right into the Shia. Let me review what I did last time very quickly, and we come into a real atomic bomb, a very fabulous topic that I'm just touching the surface today, and you can spend the next 75 years trying to figure it out. Now, I'm beginning a new topic. It begins now. It's going to last. The Ribbono Shel Olam should give me strength and health for many, many years to come. I cannot tell you how excited I am. I'm preparing for next year. I hope I'll reach it on a Reuven, and I'm really breaking through on all sides. But the idea of teaching is not to confuse, to begin Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, like Hillel Hazaken with the Ger in Masechet Shabbat. And my Rebbe never confused us. That was the greatness of the Rav, and I hope I can emulate him. Now, how do we paskin a shaila? That's the question I'm asking, and I want to deal with it for the next 25 years, Bezrat Hashem. How do we paskin a shaila? So what are the sources? So I mentioned very quickly the Mefarshim on the Gemara, the Poskim, the Meshivim, and the Mesadrin. And I said I would explain all this in due course. Let's talk about the Mefarshim now. We said there are three types of Mefarshim. Mei HaPrat al HaKlal, HaKlal al HaPrat, Mechadshim u'Mefalpalim. And very simple language, Rashi is the classic example where he takes every prat, doesn't give an introduction. You never open Masechet Brachot, Masechet Megillah, whatever Gemara you're learning, Masechet Cholin, if you're learning Daf Yomi. I believe I saw my grandson learning Masechet Bechorah from Shabbos. Am I right that Daf Yomi is up to Bechorah? Anyone here learning Daf Yomi? Started Erech and Sama, dropped behind. Okay. I saw my grandson Shabbos Bechorah, so I didn't realize it's at the very end. All right. You never saw Rashi give an introduction. I never had a Rebbe that I walked into Shia, and the Rebbe said, for the first 2 weeks of the Zman, I'm giving an introduction to Masechet Baba Kama. You began Abba Avot Mezikin, and that's Rashi. Rashi takes every word that he wants to, every line in the Gemara, gives you a perish, and then at the end, you know the klal. You know it all, because you've gone through Gemara with Rashi. I need not tell you how important Rashi is, and I state once again what I heard from the Rav, and you know, anyone will tell you the Rav was an animate of the Rambam, and we went into class, what I always went into class with was a Gemara and a Rambam. And nevertheless, the Rav stated they were making a big deal, it was some anniversary of the Rambam's death or birth. You have to look up, it's in the 1950s, so you can check out what the anniversary was. And the Rav said, everyone makes a big deal about the Rambam, but they forget, if we didn't have Rashi, no one would know how to learn a Daf Gemara. And Rashi is Rashi. Then you have a different type of Perish, Mei HaKlal El HaPrat, where you have an introduction, and then you go into the Minutia. And what's the example there? That, of course, is the Rambam Perik HaMishnayos, and above all, the Me'iri. And there, when you want, and I told you, the Me'iri started appearing in the 1930s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. They started discovering the Me'iri. Someone discovered in the Vatican. Oh, everyone loved the Me'iri. Why does everyone love the Me'iri? Because he gives a beautiful introduction. Only after a long introduction to the Mishnah, the Sugya, then he goes into more Pratim. And the Rambam essentially is like that in Perish HaMishnayos. And we went into the whole discussion of how some of my Rebbeim couldn't deal with the Me'iri. And as Rabbi Volk shouted at me, in simple English, we didn't have a Me'iri in Tells, and I can't look into a Me'iri now, quote, end quote. So a dear student, Avi Arbisfeld, who's a second generation, or maybe even a third generation student, so Avi sent me an email that when I told the story about the Rav and the Frankel Rambam, remember that story? It's an unbelievable story where he refuses to look at Seder Moed and the Frankel, they call it Zmanim, the Rambam calls it Zmanim, am I right? Not Moed, I'm calling Seder Moed from the Mishnayot. From Shas. So the Rav, they press up, the Rav says, no, does anyone have a Rambam here? And I told you, we used to lose 20% of the time in Shia with the kids chasing Sfarim up to the library, down, back, up, down. One time, I remember, it was a Sefer Mitzvah. He brought him a Sefer Mitzvah, the standard edition. The Rav said, no. Ich will not for Reb Chaim Heller. I only want Reb Chaim Heller's Sefer Mitzvah. He kicked the kid upstairs again. We lost another 5 minutes. We were on the first floor of the library. And say, all right, those were the days. I need not tell you that I teach, due to modern technology, you all know that anything I need from Shas and Peskim and Shelet and Shuvit and Mach Shabbat and Shtuyat, it's all Xeroxed and in front of me. We don't lose time. So the Rav wouldn't look at the Frankel Rambam. Only a Vashiva, he couldn't look. So Avi Arbisfeld tells me that the same thing with the Me'iri, that he says in the volume he recalls reading, I believe, by Reb Heschel Reichman in the commentator, later was collected in memoirs of that volume that was put out, Memoirs of the Rav. So the Rav, too, couldn't deal with the Me'iri. You know, it was the same concept. They didn't have the Miriam Bris, they didn't have the Miriam Velezhin, they didn't have the Miriam Haslovich, they didn't have the Miriam Warsaw, they didn't have the Miriam Berlin. The Miriam first comes out, when the Rev reaches Boston, he couldn't deal with it. You probably want to ask me, what halacha, what do you do, I'm here, yeah, we'll deal with that next year. Yeah, go ahead. So I was asked that question. That's right here in the letter. And I answered him very simply. The difference is where they were raised. The Rav came to America a finished product. America had no influence on his Shas and Paiskim learning. It had influence on his outlook, on his Hashkafa. Everything I said at the start of the Shir reflects Rebbe living in America. Gev et Toshev and Ochi Machem. How many times I've said over the Rav's Torah. I mean, that's what we were taught. That's the way we were raised. To me, it's axiomatic. I don't understand another point of view that we all have to go into a cave and not look. God have mercy. If look, I taught for 31 years over 7,000 women. Rabbi Aberman taught more women than I did. Did you ever hear a word of scandal? God have mercy. The Lubavitcher Rebbe gave Farbrengen for women only. And one Farbrengen, he had more students than I taught in 31 years. Okay? I wouldn't be surprised if there were, so in the Beis Medrash, 4,000 standing outside, another 5,000, the Rebbe. God, what are we, animals? What are we? But you see, it all begins when you start, oh, I'm going to be from separate seating at weddings. Separate seating at weddings? So what happens? Men sit and talk Lashon Hara, the women gossip, and the boys and girls that should be sitting together to make Shidduchim, it's terrible. I give Rav Breuer, you should know, Rav Yosef Breuer was under tremendous pressure when the Frumkeit binge began in America, and he unfortunately, his kahilo went along with it, as you know. The big machloek is, why did Breuer go Lakewood rather than YU? And I don't have to tell you, the killers had two tremendous blow-ups in recent years. But Rav Breuer finally says, all right, said, we always had separate seating. Man, woman, woman, man, woman, man at a table. We always had separate seating. But all right, if there'll be separate seating, and this is America, and Frumkeit, and the Lakewood influence, Rav Breuer said, on one condition, the men and women who are not married must sit together. Today already it's way beyond that. To make a shidduch, you need to be introduced, they have to check out, and love doesn't come before marriage, love comes, you grow into it. No, that would be fine. How many scandals do we have? How many divorces do we have? Hashem Yerachem El Sheyit Amo? You're not talking to a stranger. I don't want to even mention my daughter, her profession, what she sees, and this is Israel. And in America, they tell me it's three times as bad, because to get divorced, you have to have money. So Baruch Hashem, in America, people have more money, more divorces. Charedim, Hasidim, Lakewood, why you? Modern Orthodox. Someone just picked up my shiram on love and marriage, and said, why doesn't the world listen? I said, I gave them in the kollel. I can't repeat it every time. Now, of course, the third method is chidushim u'mefapulim, and that's like the Tosfot, like the Rashba, like Ramban, most of the Rishonim on Shas. And they're very long in what they talk about. But they don't talk about everything. See, it's interesting that ultimately they're all the same size in what they're doing. Rashi on a Masechet and the Rashba with all his Kipulim and Mechadshim and you take Tosfot. Ultimately, I don't know who has more words on the Sugya, Rashi or Tosfot. Rashi has on everything, but briefly. Tosfot has side references, cross references, Shelot, Tshuvot, etc. Okay, then we come to a second area, and we're going to devote, I believe, the rest of the day to the second area. And it's the most important area as far as you're concerned, because those of you studying for Smicha are absolutely caught up in this area. And that is Poskim. Now, I asked the question that everyone asked, and we propose answers. I'm not the first to give these answers. I think we're right, but This is scholarship. We're guessing. We're trying to predict the past. Moshe, you got that word? Wrap it out. We're trying to predict the past. When someone tells me what's going to be in a year from now in Israel, I tell them it's hard enough to predict the past. You want me to predict the future? Why do you need Sifrei Poskim? The Gemara doesn't give psak. The Gemara has endless machloket, and it'll give a psak, but it's not organized. There's Divrei Agada, there's philosophy, there's history, there's Musa. The Gemara has everything. There are attitudes towards men, and attitude towards women, attitudes towards life, difference in personalities. Wow, everything. The Talmud is the greatest work ever done by Basav Adam in the history of mankind. Ask the Koreans, and you'll see what they have to say today. So this is the Talmud. Why do you need Sifrei Psak? So two reasons are given. One, Jews start going into a very great gullus. By the 7th, 8th century of the Common Era, Jews are starting to move all over. Once you start to move, you're moving away from your rebbeim, you're moving away from your yeshivat, you're moving away from your shuls. A frum Jew by nature is conservative with a small c. Nothing is harder than leaving where we grew up and what influenced us. And we all have that feeling. Some of you come to Griskolil a year, you wind up staying 3 years, 4 years, you go into the rabbinate. Anyone I know, go back to Reb Shimon Shkop. Reb Shimon Shkop takes his son back to the Lushan to visit, and he shows his son, this is well known, this is in Reb Shimon's biography, he shows his son the seat where he learned in the Lushan 30 years earlier. And he tells his son, these were the greatest years of my life. And Chab Gevarim Dembenkel, I sat on this bench and I learned by the Netziv and Gedolei Velushin. And of course, if you ask me, you'll ask Rabbi Reuben, what was the greatest moment in your life? There's no two ways about it. When we sat before the Rav in room 102 in what's called the main academic center building of Yeshiva University, those were the greatest moments of our life. How chaval that we had to leave it. So, but you have to leave, you have to move on, you have to influence, you have to teach, and you need a book to tell you halacha l'maisa. You can't ask your Rebbe every day. So this is one reason we begin with psak literature. Another reason, of course, is we now have a movement against Torah, the Karayim, the Karaites. The Karaites become very big by the 9th century, the 10th century. It was a movement of hundreds of thousands. And they are asking questions. Why are you a rabbinic Jew? Why do you keep the halacha? Why do you allow a fire in your house on Shabbat? How can you leave food cooking on Shabbat? Lo tvar reish b'chol moshvoteichem. And 1,001 questions like this. We have to have answers. And this is why we have the psak literature. And we ended off last time, and we ended off that probably the first great volume with psak in it that survives are the Shiltot. The Shiltot, is the volume called Shiltot. And we explained that the Shiltot that we attribute to Rav Chai Gaon, one of the early Gaonim in Bavel, and it represented drushes on the Pasha of the week. And in every drusha, he discussed the halacha that was applicable and went through the sugyas and gave you psak. And we explained why it was called she'iltot. The general feeling is that people only had time to learn on Shabbos. They worked hard during the week for Panasa. There was no state of Israel to support them. They had to learn a core curriculum and work. The sheish yamim tasem alachtecha. And Shabbos, they learned, Shabbos, nach the kugel, nach the challen, after the kugel, after the challen, you're tired. So to keep the people awake, every she'ilta begins with a question, she'ela. Rabbi Reuben said he was trying to teach his son was not a good student, so Rabbi Achai Gon developed a method of questions which wakes even a poor student up. I think both explanations are correct.
That was
And I understand. I'm well aware of it. But I believe what we're both saying is exactly the same. It doesn't necessarily have to be a son. It can be the Hamon Ha'am. You have to wake them up with a drusha, with a question. And as I've told rabbis when I speak about homiletics, if you don't begin with something shocking, a question, an idea, you lose them. Because the attention span of the average adult on Shabbos morning when he's been busy all week with the stock market or busy whatever his business is, his attention span is 3 to 4 minutes. But if you capture him with a good question or a good insight, and then he's going to keep awake. I got to hear this drasha. Okay. And I should thank Rabbi Muskin in Beverly Hills and Century City. I'm told that he's given drasha from my book, and he begins, this is, I don't want to use the words, but he praises the book, and everyone jumps up, what book is this? And they see this big book he's holding, Washington Avenue to Washington. See, he captures them, and then he can give the drasha. Now, I'll tell you, and now I'm coming into something that you got to think about, and this is literally Torah versus Mada. And what do I mean by that? You talk about the Shiltot. So which edition do you use? And remember, you're dealing with a volume that's quoted by Tosfot. We have never seen the original manuscript. If anyone could come up with the original manuscript of the Shiltot, he will never have to work another minute in his life. That Ktav Yad would be worth on today's market, I wouldn't say much, $500 million. There'll be Jews that I know who would pay $500 million to own the original manuscript. But we don't have it. We don't have it. So what do we have? And remember, we have copies of copies of copies of copies. All of you know the game. What are they called? The game? Post office. You don't play games anymore. You're with the computer. When I was a kid growing up, let's say we have a Bnei Akiva session and they want to play a game, so you tell the first kid in the room a message and it now goes through 30 people and you wind up, what did we say? And you know, you tell the first kid, I hate Rabbi Rakefet, he's sure I'm a boring, he puts me to sleep. By the time it gets to the 30th kid, the kid says, I love the Rebbe, he keeps us alive and alert, he's wonderful. And that's what happens. So you're getting the Shiltot, you're getting variant readings. What is the proper text? Okay, gentlemen, who was the first one with deep links to Yeshiva University to write on the Shiltot? Who do you say? No? No, what Revel? Did it Siva Velazhen, Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Reb's great-grandfather? Rav Rafon Shapiro's father-in-law, Rav Chaim is the Rav's great-great-grandfather, Zayn Elter Zayda. Gentlemen, make believe you know all about the life of the Netziv, that the ignorant pass for the wise. I can't start to talk about it. I spoke about the Netziv years ago in the Monday class. Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, this was a grandson-in-law of Rav Chaim Velazhen. He was the Velazhen of Rosh Yeshiva Gadol Mirabin Shemo. Who are we talking about? Shelton, he was a Posek Mufak. Something that none of the Soloveitchiks were. They destroyed Psak, but those are different lectures. I'm going to give it to my grandchildren this week, Bezrat Hashem. We're going to have a session with the grandchildren. But anyway, the Netziv of Velazhen, what a giant. What's among his most, if not his most famous sefer, you will know the Meshik Dava, the Hamik Dava, right? The Hamik Dava, those are the Shurim he used to say on Chumash every morning in Velazhen. Ah, but his what he considered his magnum opus was the Ha'amik She'elah. And what is the Ha'amik She'elah? Look at it. Look at it in the library. Familiarize yourself. He takes the classic edition of the Shiltot, which is not scientific, just the one that was printed and printed and reprinted, and he writes a tremendous perish on it. And he deals with what the Shiltot has to say, compares it to the Bavli, compares it to the Yerushalmi, compares it to the Tosefta, raises problems and solves it like Shiurim he would be giving and probably did give inversion. Okay. Connection to YU, I don't have to tell you, his Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, his great-grandson, becomes Rosh Yeshiva at YU, December 1929, gives his first shiur there. His great-great-grandson, Mori Urebi, Rabbi Yosef Dave Halevi Soloveitchik, his great-great-grandson, Rabbi Aaron Halevi Soloveitchik. What a connection, then it's Siv. And then I'm in graduate school. Now, one of my professors in graduate school, Rabbi Dr. Professor Shmuel Kalman Mirsky. Gedenks? Rabbi Reuben, you remember him or not? Rabbi of the Young Israel of Borough Park. But that was not the real Rabbi Mirsky. The real Rabbi Mirsky was, he grew up in Yerushalayim. He's from an old Yerushalmi family. All the half the Eid HaRedit and half the leaders of Agudat Yisrael and half the Chiloniyim in the country are related to him. They're all his cousins. It's the Rivlin family, if you know what I'm talking about. The Stampfer Rivlin family, they celebrated 200 years here, 225 years here. Each one had a different celebration. He already was an Ilui in his youth. I believe he went to Eitz Chaim. He may have spent some time in Merkaz HaRav, I don't think, but I think he got to America, if not, it has to be checked out, but if not I'm mistaken, he got to America in the late 20s already. And he was a tremendous bucky. He knew everything, the back of his hand. But he went a little further. He went to Columbia University and studied the scientific method and did a doctorate at Columbia U. He was already over 50 years of age when he did his doctorate. I want you to understand, Kol HaKavod. And what was his magnum opus? The Shiltat. But very different than Nitziv. A scientific addition, critical scholarship, footnotes, variant readings, manuscripts. And he was able to resolve some of the questions that the Nitziv dealt with and the Nitziv wrote about, able to resolve them simply by showing that the printed Shiltar had the wrong reading. If you dig up the ancient manuscripts, if you see what's available in libraries around the world, you will find that perhaps there were variant readings that resolve all the difficulties. Now I have to tell you, this is a problem that haunts us in scholarship till this very moment. I can give you another example, the Huntington Rambam. Anybody know what I'm talking about, the Huntington Rambam? Why was it that with the Frankel Rambam, what was the last volume to come out? The very first volume of the Rambam, Sefer Mada and Sefer Ahava. Why? Why was that last? What were they waiting for? Because everyone knew that in the, I believe it's the Bodleian Library, there was a manuscript in a Talmud of the Rambam wrote over, copied from his master, the Mishneh Torah. And the Rambam signed on this manuscript that he went through it and the manuscript is accurate. All that survives of this manuscript is Sefer Mada and Sefer Ahava. It was owned by a noble English family, royalty, known as the Huntington family. They had the Huntington estate and this was the Huntington manuscript. Over the years, it wound up in this famous library. Finally, after years of work, it was published. There is an unbelievable introduction by a big Talmud Chacham. You have to look at it to appreciate what I'm saying. And he shows about 50 different questions Or maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's 27. I have it, I should look, but the exact number. But it's, I'm positive it's over 25. Of questions asked by Achronim, by Reb Chaim, by Reb Shimon, by Reb Naftali Trupp, and he resolves the questions on the basis of the old manuscripts, the Huntington manuscript, which is more correct than any published manuscript we have. So you see, you have here a clash. Torah, which I use now as a popular expression for the traditional way we have learned, Torah versus a scientific approach, manuscripts, critical footnotes, searches, libraries. Where can we find fragments? Cairo Geniza, Huntington manuscript. Do we have anything in the Cairo Geniza that is part of Sefer Ahava and Sefer Mada? Wow. So be aware that this question haunts us until today. How do you handle a Meiri? The original Meiris came out without footnotes, without cross-references. A great-great-grandson of the Chatam Sofer, Professor Schreiber, Sofer, who taught at the seminary in New York, that's the way he made his panasa, and devoted his whole life to editing the Meiri, to working with manuscripts, working with variant readings, working with footnotes. What about if the Meiri quotes a Gemara that it's not the exact text we have in our Gemara? So you have to find where he got it from. And you all know, so much has been written, variant readings, Sofrim, Yad Rav Herzog. So gentlemen, already with the Shiltat, this entire question of Torah versus Mada comes to the fore. And one time, Professor Mirsky, who I was very close to in graduate school, by the way, Rabbi Dr. Frank Schach, who died recently, Zichrono Livracha, who is my classmate in Bernard Rebel Graduate School. So Effie, we always used to talk about Professor Mirsky. If you studied with him, he left an impact. And one time he whispered to me, "You should know, Arnold, that I had tremendous respect for the Netziv. But now, after I did my work and compared all the manuscripts," he says, "I lost a little of that respect because all these pinpolim, some of them I just answered with one variant reading." And I always thought about that comment, but I can tell you, you want my own opinion, I just say it to you in two words, because my own opinion is not important, but the question is a real difficult question. It leaves you thinking. My own opinion is very simple. To start learning, we have to teach the traditional way. All these programs of teaching kids already in high school and teach them about variant readings and teach them about tiers in the Talmud, or what they call layers and generations and chronological order. If you start teaching a kid that way, you will get nowhere. I have a classmate, Rabbi Harris Gedalia. Some of you know Harris. So Harris married Judy Bentheim. He was able to do something none of us could do. Took off. Listen to this story, Yitzchak, you won't regret it. He took off a year and he went all over the world and he winds up in Jews College. He wanted to see what Jews College was like, and then he comes to Hebrew U and he studies with Professor Shraga Abramson. So I come in Aliyah and I get hold of Harris. Professor Abramson was a Slabutka yeshiva boy, chavruta of Reb David Lifshitz, who knew all of Shas and was the greatest scientific Jewish scholar in the state of Israel at that time. What an individual, Professor. He, his son-in-law is a graduate of the Kollel. So he takes a course with Professor Abramson, and I come in Aliyah and I ask him very innocently. I think he learned Horiot with him. So I asked him, "Nu, how would you compare it to learning Horiot with the Rav?" So Harris answers me, "If we learned it with the Rav, we'd know every sugya, the halacha, we'd know the Rashi and Tosfos, the Rambam, the Ravid." He says, "With Professor Abramson, I know every variant reading there is to know on Masechet Horiot." So you see, there's a plus and a minus. And my own feeling is, first you have to teach a young man to traditional learning, and when he masters Shas and Poskim, if he wishes to go into a scientific approach and do something big for Klal Yisrael and give us an edited Ritva, an edited Rashba, an edited Ramban, come up with another manuscript to deal with the, oh, beautiful, but the basis has to be real learning. I'm totally opposed to those people who teach the science and haven't given the bus of the Yayin. Okay, the Shiltot was the first. Following the Shiltot, we have a number of attempts. A Sefer came out in the 8th century, Rabbi Yehuda ben Nachman Gaon, what we call the Hilchot Psukot, Halachot Psukot. That appeared in many versions. It was called, it had many different names, but it didn't leave a lasting influence because we never had a complete, total manuscript. The Sefer that conquered the halachic world and becomes the most famous Gaonic Sefer, a Sefer which we deal with until this very moment, is of course the Sefer Hilchot Gedolot, known as the Bahag, Baal Hilchot Gedolot. And here we're talking about the 9th century, we're talking about a Sefer which has influenced halakha and halakhic discussion until this very moment. We don't even know for sure who the author was. Most scholars attribute it to Reb Shimon Kayara, but we can't be certain. Whenever the Sefer is quoted, you notice Tosfot will quote it, it is called the Bahag. You will recognize it from the Sefer HaMitzvot, from the Rambam, the Bahag, the Rambam, Maimonides, Nachmanides, the Bahag, Shitat HaBahag. You will see the Bahag quoted tens of thousands of times in rabbinic literature. Now, what makes the Bahag so different and so important? Okay, first of all, it is the first rabbinic sefer we have that has an introduction. And first time ever, mamish an introduction in the full sense of the word. I will quote to you from the introduction in a minute. You'll get a feeling what it's about. In addition, at the end of the introduction, it goes into the famous Maimon Chazal that there are 613 mitzvot. This, of course, is a Gemara in Makot, right towards the end of Chav Gimel Amid Bet, Omar Rabbi Simloi, and he gives us the famous cloud that the Tanyak Mitzvot and the Bahag is the first one to list out Tanyak Mitzvot. His list started a rabbinic discussion that continues until today. The Rambam came out with his Sefer HaMitzvot, and all of you know that he rips apart the Bahag on many basic concepts. The Ramban, of course, defends the Bahag, and the literature on the Bahag, the Ramban, and Maimonides, and the Sefer HaMitzvot is endless, and that continues until this very moment. No one who has ever learned on a high level has bypassed the Bahag. He stares at you from Tosfos, he stares at you with the machlokot between the Ramban and the Rambam in Nogea to the 613 mitzvot, what you count, what you don't count. But the Bahag, for another reason, was very important. How do you codify law? How do you codify law? You come into a legal library, where do you look? The Bahag introduced a unique system. He followed Shas. But it was a lot more than following Shas. Whenever he touched upon a concept, and I'll give you an example in a few minutes, he went into it in detail. In other words, it was Seder HaShas, like the Rif, like the Rush, like many of the other codes that we have to deal with. But if he touched upon a concept, let's say a riven, one line in the Gemara, in a riven, he went into a whole discourse on a riven, quoting from Bracha, quoting from Shabbos, giving you more halacha, giving you musa, giving you thought. It was both following Shas, but it was topical. Very different when you just say following Shas. Shas has no order. Don't have to tell you, an index to Shas just came out now in English, right? I think we spoke about it, made the New York Times. An index to Shas. They asked, what do you need an index? You have a computer, they have the Bar Ilan programs. They said, number one, it's for people like Rakefet. He's right. People my age can't do a computer, doesn't talk to us. Learn a Daf Gemara on a computer? Mandach HaShmei. But number two, you don't have to be Rakefet to have a problem. Shabbos, what do? You need an index. It's a fabulous job, I understand. I haven't seen it, but I look forward to seeing it. It was put out by Feldheim, I'm told.
It's amazing.
Baruch Hashem. I have to get myself into it. But today you can't get into Meir Shalim. It's a war zone. You know what's going on. Today, Dafka, it's a war zone. Mamish today. Over a different issue already. You'll read about it. It's the headline news in Israel today. Everything. Iran can go under. Saudi Arabia can get under. But here, Kika Shabbos is the leading news item today. I don't advise anyone to go to Kika Shabbos this evening. Anyway, so Shas is all mixed up. There's no water. He follows Shas, but when he hits a topic, he exhausts the topic and he goes way beyond the Gemara in front of him. Now, how do we know about the Hilchot, about the Halachot Gedolot? How do we know about the Sefer? How do we have a decent copy? How do we know what we have is the original manuscript? Because the Bahag, we're more fortunate. It was written at a later period, more definitive volumes in manuscript survive. Which family devoted their life to the Bahag? No, what do you know? Let's hear. The Hildesheimer family of Berlin. Rabbi Dr. Israel Hildesheimer. Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, the founder of the Rabbinic Seminary in Berlin, the Orthodox Rabbinical Seminary. His doctorate, 1888, was an edited edition of the Bahag. His great-grandson in the State of Israel re-edited it and put out, it's either great-grandson or grandson. Of course, there were two Israel Hildesheimers floating around Israel. I think this was the grandson. I may be wrong. The one I knew very well, I believe, was a great-grandson. They were cousins. His grandson put out a second edition of the Bahag, including manuscripts and critical editing that had developed and had been discovered since the 1880s. And now in Yerushalayim, Machon Yerushalayim in 1992 put out a fabulous edition of the Bahag with Hildesheimer's, both of them, with their work included and more commentaries and sub-commentaries, and you have a beautiful edition to consult. Of course, with all the commentaries and the editing, instead of the Bahag being 150 pages, it's now hundreds and hundreds of pages in massive volumes. But the Bahag is here to stay. More than any other Sefer, this is the one of the Gaonic period that everyone consults and everyone has access to. Okay. Now, I want to show you, what are we talking about with the Bahag? What do we mean? What are we talking about? An introduction. And here I have it before my eyes. Hakdamat Hilchot Gedolot of the Bahag. Tell me, what did we say was the reason for Psak literature? What was the reason that people had to Paskin Halacha? What was the reason that people had to give us a book that is tangible, that you can look at, that you can see, that you can understand? So he said they moved far away, and they're fighting the Apikursim, the Karayim. Gentlemen, when you read the introduction, there is no question this is a manifesto against the Karayim. If you read it today, there's no question that it's a manifesto against conservative and reform Judaism who have left the path of Torah, who deny the Torah Shabbal Peh, who deny the tradition. Look how the introduction begins. Baruch atah Hashem Shek Kiddushon of a Mitzvotav V'tzivanu al Divrei Torah Ha'revna Hashem Elokeinu Hashebach Habanu. The Birchat HaTorah. What a Birchat HaTorah. On Torah Shabbal Peh, learning. And then he quotes Psukim. Achal Shalti Miat Hashem. Oto Avakesh. Shifti Beveit Hashem Kol Yemei Chayai. Lachzot Benoam Hashem. Ulevakeh Beheichalo. Leif Tahar Barali Elokim. V'ruach nachon chadesh b'kir bi. D'racha Hashem hodieni, hodchotecha lamdani. And he goes on and on. Yesh Torah shel chesed, yesh Torah shel shel chesed. Amar Ablazi is quoting in from Sota, Torah l'shma zuhi Torah shel chesed. Shelo l'shma zuhi Torah she'eno shel chesed. Davar acher, Torah shelo lelamda, zuhi Torah sheino chesed. Torah lelamda, zu Torah shel chesed. And this is exactly against the Karayim, the Reform, the Conservative. If you don't study Torah to observe, if you don't study Torah to learn, if you don't study Torah to increase your knowledge, you will never be a good Jew. Torah means Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebal Peh. Torah means learning, Torah means knowledge, Torah means dedication, Torah means surrender. It's literally, you can feel the Bahag talking against innovators, reformers, liminehem. And then, at the end of the year, another big introduction. Darash Rebli Simlai, Sheish Mayat Vishloshes Ve Mitzvot Netztavu Yisrael. And he quotes the entire Gemara, and then he goes in mitzvah by mitzvah. What are the mitzvot? What are we talking about? And this is the Bahag. And this is the first introduction we have ever had to any sefer in rabbinic literature. But the times were such, you couldn't just depend upon learning, open up a Gemara, open up the Bahag, open up the Hilchot Gedolot. That's not enough. You have to feel it. You have to know what it's about. You have to know why you're learning. It's everything that we try to do today in giving a Torah education. I've heard so many kids complain bitterly about Gemara and how they teach Gemara, and there's no feeling, and why do we need it, and it's boring, and it doesn't apply to us. What a difference it makes when you have a Rebbe who takes the Gemara and sandwiches it with Musa, with philosophy, with ethics, with Torah history, with emotion, with meaning. And if you can tell a youngster, when you're learning a Daf Gemara, you're learning exactly the way your grandfather did, your great-grandfather, and if you succeed, that's the way your great-great-grandson will be learning that same Daf Gemara. Continuity, love, surrender, understanding. No innovation. We can't throw away Shabbos. We can't throw away Kashrut. We can't throw away the prohibition on homosexuality. We have to be Torah Jews. We have to let Ger is much more important than being a Toshav, as the Rebbe so many times explained it. It's a beautiful introduction. I couldn't get over it, but, you know, Birchat HaTorah, and believe me, Birchat HaTorah, the most important bracha that you'll say during the day. And the proof is very simple. Who ever heard of a mitzvah when there are three brachot on the mitzvah? Every other mitzvah, I don't know, you name the mitzvah, they told to take a lulav, to hear shofar, to create hamigillah. I don't want to get involved now with creating megillah. Is a mitzvah that should be listed among the tayaganat, all right? We're dealing with the Bahag and the Rambam and the Ramban. I don't want to get involved. But any other mitzvah, you make one bracha. Tvilah kelim, tvilah benisha, tvilah v'geya, one bracha. Talmud Torah, lo amaretz chassid, the lo bur yurei chet, and I'm a litvak. It all begins with Talmud Torah. When you have Talmud Torah, you won't talk like a fool, you won't act like a fool. And remember, when you get smicha, that's not the end of learning. Smicha is the start of learning. It's a license to start learning. Kol haTorah kula. When I got smicha, I was an am aretz the oraita. Take my word for it. What did I know? What did I know? Put together a little part of your Adaya. All right, I knew the Mishnah Brura or Chaim, maybe a few hundred daf of Gemara. That's knowing something, Daniel? What are we talking about? God have mercy on us. Shas and Paiskim, there's a world out there. Machshava. Jewish history is also a mitzvah when learned properly. The mitzvah, all right, not the same, but it's also important. Okay. Now, let me give you an example of his system, because that system becomes very, very important. I'm quoting now, I picked this topic purposely because I'll come back to it next year. Let me quote a Gemara to you. Gemara Ne'ruvin, Daf Mem Aleph Amid Bet. It's the start of the Perek, Mishnah. Misha Tzi Nachem Aruch Ra, Eino Ale Dalet Amot. Chegziru Ki'ilu Lo Yatsa. Okay, what is this talking about? Lo Aleinu, I hope none of you have had to deal with mental illness. But mental illness is, I'm sure Rabbi Wiener has dealt with mental illness. Mental illness is part of life. I got one of my masters, my MA in Jewish history, deals with mental illness, with the schizophrenia issue, with the Cleves, with the divorce in Cleves, 1766. So, lo aleinu, I want to tell you, I've met people who will tell you that there's a dibbuk in them. I've met people now, here, this year. I'm not talking ancient history. Well, you meet people very depressed. And they run away on Shabbos. No, Shabbos, how far can you go when you leave the tchum? Dalet amot, that's all you have. So, the Mishnah says, Mishot siu nachrim aruach ra, Gentiles took you by force, robbed you, dropped you off far from the city, far from the tchum Shabbos. By the way, in Israel, I don't know where you mean, maybe on the road to Eilat, you can find where there are no houses, where there's no continuity. I mean, generally in Israel, there's continuity all over, but there must be a Tchum Shabbos. Maybe at a certain point when you leave the city, you don't have continuity. So, Gentiles took him out. Or Ruach Ra, a Dibbuk possessed him. The Dibbuk told him he has to leave the city, or like in the Cleves divorce case, he was schizophrenic, paranoid. He was worried he was going to be killed. He ran out. So if you wake up and you become normal again, you can't budge. All you have is dalet amot. What about if people from the city came hunting for you, sakonat nefashat, whatever the reason, and they brought you back to the city, because if you don't come back to the city, you're besakana, and they went out, and the halacha is if they go out to save, it could very well be they're allowed to come back. It's a gezeira. The Rabbanan who made the original gezeira abolished it in cases where there is pikuach nefesh involved, necessity, etc. I don't have to tell you. I've seen this. If you come lahatzil, if you come for someone to give birth, if you come to save from flooding waters, so you become a member of the city even though you were not kaina makam in the city before Shabbos. So, that's what the Mishnah says, that if you come back, it's if you don't, didn't go out. Now, what story is involved here? What are we talking about? We're talking about Chumash Shabbos. And we now get involved in the whole problem. The Gemara doesn't get involved, but he quotes the Mishnah, quotes the Gemara, and then he gets involved, and I'm quoting from the edited edition of Machon Yerushalayim, page Kuf Nun Tet, 159. The Bahag goes through all the laws of Erev Chatzeirat, Erev Tchumim. It's very fascinating. I should say Erev Tchumim, not Erev Chatzeirat. All the laws of Erev Tchumim. And you all know this is a number of places in Shas. For instance, you live in a city, for the sake of argument, you live in Brooklyn. And for the sake of argument, in a suburb of Brooklyn, or Queens would be a better example, when there's suburbs right adjacent to it, a chacham is coming to give a drasha on Shabbat. And to walk to that city, let's say to Lawrence, I believe this continuity that it wouldn't apply, but let's assume you have a big break and it's Pekutz L'Tchum. What do you do Erev Shabbos? You go halfway and you put down food for two meals and you make a bracha and you're koina that's where you are being Mekabel Shabbos. You are koina until that point, and therefore you have Alpayim Amma in all directions from the point where you put down the food and made an Erev Tchumim before Shabbat. I remember in Moshe Var, if I recall correctly, we used to do it if we knew on Shabbos we were going to go in one direction, and we did make an Erev Tchumim at times. It could be we were going to meet people from another camp, and there it was mamish country territory, there were no homes, there was no continuity, and you mamish had to put down an Erev Tchumim. So you see, look what happens here. You're dealing with a person being driven out of the city. You're dealing with the Issa of going more than Alpayim Amma Chutz L'Ir on Shabbat. You're dealing here with Erev Tchumim. But he doesn't just deal with the Gemara and Erevin. He quotes Gemaras from all over Shas. He quotes Gemaras from all over Erevin, much later in the Masechet. He gives Musa. He quotes the Mechilta to B'Shalach Ruki Hashem Notein Lechem Et HaShabbat. Amar Lechem Moshe Yisrael, Hizaharu Shehamakom Notein Lechem Et HaShabbat L'Shamra. And it's so important, Shabbat. And he goes into the Mun. And every day the Mun came separate. On Erev Shabbat, they would find the challah together. Musa, the importance of Shabbat. And he speaks about when do you make an Erev. You only make an Erev for a Devah Mitzvah, to do a Mitzvah, to hear a Drasha, to be Mabaka Chayla, etc., etc. And then he gets involved in the whole question of people coming to save, what we spoke about before, quoting the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Isha Chachama Ba'alei Leid, V'cheina Ba'alat Silmin Agayas, Min Hanar, Min Adleika, Min Amapolet, Harechim Ka'anshe Ha'ir, V'yesh Lechem Alpayim Amma, L'chol Ruach. And it's an amazing thing. Then he goes in, he deals with another problem, and it's a Gemara much later in the written, but he dramatizes it. No? How many of you are in the medical profession? How many of you work for Hatzalah? How many of you work for Zaka? Imagine you get a call on Shabbos, there's a fire in a building, the plot or whatever turned over, an electrical short, God have mercy, we have cases like this even today, a Shabbos candle caught fire with a curtain, etc., and everyone runs on their motorcycles, and then by the time you get there, no longer a problem, the fire went out, no longer danger. Tell me, were you Mechalel Shabbos? Were you allowed to do what you did? Absolutely. What about if you go out and you're told the river is overflowing, and the Adam Matai Hatam Itrachashen Nisa, and when you get there, a miracle happened, and it's no longer overflowing, there's no longer danger. They don't need you. Nevertheless, you have Alpayim Amma, it's like you went and you did a tremendous mitzvah, and you see, it's a classic example. Seida Hashas, but once he touches a topic, he more or less exhausts it. Seida Hashas, nevertheless, Musa, a little bit more, a little bit from the Medrashim, you can feel he's fighting the Karayim. The Karayim, how did you leave your house? How did you leave your place? Al Yetzayish Bim Komo. How did you budge? And you can feel the spirit here. This is Torah Hashem Tamima. Now, you know what's fascinating? It's a Sefer Psak, the Bahag, but only what he wants to talk about. For instance, remember I corrected myself a few minutes ago? There's nothing here about an Erev Chatzerot. Talks about an Erev Tchumim, nothing about an Erev Chatzerot. What's fascinating is, I'll show you next year, that Tosfot quotes the Bahag and Erev Chatzerot. And that quote does not exist in our standard edition of the Bahag. And some of the people, some of the Mefarshim, want to say that it was a Sfadic version, which we no longer have, that Tosfos is quoting. But you see what you get involved with manuscripts that we never saw. We don't have. We have versions, maybe we have a version that was copied 50 times over until it reached our hands. So we're getting a 50th version, and even if each scribe only made one mistake per page, I don't have to tell you, any book that's published, they're typos. I happen to be very impressed with Washington that a total of 3 typos were all that were found in the entire book. It's a credit to Geffen, it's a credit to modern technology, a credit to the spelling checks and all they do. But nevertheless, there were 3 typos. And you can take any book published by the biggest, most famous publisher in the world, you're going to find typos. And there are 2 other minor mistakes, but those I should have caught. The woman reading my handwriting didn't read Greenwald. She read Diane Grunfeld. It wound up Grunfeld instead of Grunwald. So it's a mistake. And a Talmud caught it, and he's absolutely right. But that was my mistake. I shouldn't. But the trouble is, when you read something, you read what you think is written. In other words, proofreading is a very hard task. It needs very skilled eyes. Because you're used to reading what you believe. You're reading quickly, you're reading, you see what you think you see. But imagine a manuscript, and imagine Tosfos quotes it, and we cannot find it. So it's very fascinating. The Bahag, the edited Bahag, the system of the Bahag, the way he worked, and what happens as a result. My dear students, we're putting down the crescendo of the shiur now that will occupy us next week. Next week, only come to class if you have a knife, a sword, and you're willing to do battle. Because contemporary issues, right here in Bayit Vegan versus Bayit Vegan, will explode right before your eyes, and the Rebbe is going to war. Is he right or wrong? You can decide, but I give you 49 years to think about it. Mendy, I'm being very serious. Now, what do we see from this? What do we see? Gentlemen, there are 3 different developments, concepts that come out of this. Concepts that affect us down to the year 2013. from the Shiltot, from the Bahag. And as I said, between the Shiltot and Bahag, there was Sefer, it had many different names, Halachat Psukot, and it was also called by other names, but that didn't survive in toto. It basically was lost along the way. But the Bahag, that's the starting point. Number one, how do you write a Sefer of Psak? Do you give ideas? The whole Shakla Vitaria? How I reach the conclusion I reach? For instance, a guy I know named Rakefet gave a half year on inter-ethnic marriages. Am I right? Okay. By the time those shirim are over, you can understand when Rakefet paskins, he knows what he's doing, and you can see his thought process. A guy I know named Rakefet gave a year and a half on Yontif Sheni Shel Galyut. I need not tell you, when Rakefet paskins on Yontif Sheni Shel Galyut, you can understand his thought process. Well, no, who needs a year and a half? Who need? What are you talking about? The average human being, what do I have time, a year and a half to Yashurim on Yontif Sheni versus a Meshuggah? One little sif in the Shulchan Aruch, and Rakefet speaks a year and a half on it. We just need black and white. If you're in America, 2 days. If you're in Israel, it's 1 day. It doesn't matter where you're from, what you're from, what you think, what you do, what your plans are. It's like Creed on Megillah. That's it. Period. That's a psak. Right, what I just told you is the Rav's psak, Rav Chaim's psak, it's an endless Rav, the Chazon Ish. I mean, it, endless people paskin that way. The Chacham Tzvi, the Minchat Lozo. All right, Rav Moshe does not pass in that way. But it's black and white. 1, 2. Or no. You want to understand the whole thought development. What good is it to have a Rebbe shout at me 1 day, 2 days? Rebbe, I own property in Israel. I have a home in Tinyak and I have a home in Jerusalem. I'm a wealthy man. I just understood, I heard a conversation, a house sold in the old city, an apartment for $6 million overlooking the Kotel. All right, they got a bargain. They can't get a car in, but they can overlook the Kotel. That is correct. No, I'm a wealthy man. I have an apartment overlooking the Kotel. I can see Rakefet every Friday night and his minion. What do I do? Well, that's a difficult question already. And when I'm in Teaneck, I'm dreaming about Israel. Am I Israeli? Am I American? Shulchan Aruch, you got to give a whole explanation. You can't just give them an answer. Okay? I need not tell you that the greatest Sifrei Poskim were written without any explanation whatsoever. Jay just shot it at you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The greatest example, the Rambam. Second example, which is not as good as the Rambam for reasons we'll see next week, but it's still a powerful example, the Shulchan Aruch. This is what you do. Period. Don't expect to find large explanations. I know what you want to ask, the Beis Yosef. I'll deal with that next week. Relax. That's not your question?
No, but that's a good point.
Thank you. Believe me, it's a good point. But I had a good teacher in that, Professor Menachem Alon, looking to Mishpat Avri. But I'll allude to it next week. But I want the class to understand the basics now. You understand? Yeah. Okay. So that's one tremendous difference. How do we give reasons? How do we Paskin? Do we give our thought process or just the black and white answer? Then, of course, there's a second great area that we've alluded to, the Bahag. How do you go? Do you follow Seder HaShas, which is called a Yam? It's confusing. You need 101 indices to find what you want. Who can be like Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and know it all by heart? Rav Aaron knows it all by heart.
You know, my what I always say, I used to boast to my students in BMT, I can find any Gemara for you. And I used to show them what the Rav taught us, how to find any Gemara. But then I would say, yeah, but this is nothing of our listeners. He knows it all by heart. He doesn't need the Rav's tricks to find the Gemara. Do you follow Shas? Like the Rif did? Like the Rush did? Like the Bahag did to a certain degree? Or no? Do you come up with an organized sefer? What you do when you wake up in the morning? Follow an organized sefer. How do you put on tefillin? Fits it. How do you daven? Baruch Shama, Sukkei Dezimra, Shema, Shmon Esrei, Birchat Kohanim, Kriyat HaTorah, right or wrong. Now what am I doing for you? I'm paraphrasing the Shulchan Aruch. Organized, fine. The Rambam, Sefer Zmanim, Sefer Ahava, Sefer Nashim, Sefer Nezikin, Sefer Kodshim, Sefer Avoda, if I have it right. One after another, he gave beautiful titles, Sefer Zrayim. By the way, that's how you can find the Rav taught us. The Rambam is organized topically. Look up the topic you're interested in, look at the Rambam, then look at the Mefarshim on the Rambam. You'll find the Kesef Mishnah. The Mishnah will all tell you which Gemara he got it from. 95% of the time. 5% of the time, you don't know where the Rambam got it from, and that's why there's more written on the Rambam than any other Sefer. But you see, this is the second point. Do we follow Seder HaShas, the Rif, the Rush? Or no? Our own unique organization. Ve'ein lanu dugma'ot yoter tovot than the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. And then, of course, there's a third division. A very important division. What halacha do you handle? I'll tell you what happened to me in the Shtivlach. I always carry with me Xerox pages of the Gemara I'm learning. After I learned in life, the most important enemy you have is the passage of time. And you have to fight it, you have to be a matmid, you have to always learn. Because otherwise time overwhelms you, and before you know it, it's time to go to sleep, and you didn't do this, you didn't do that. So I had some, I must have been learning Bechara, then I don't even remember. It was towards the, I wasn't learning Chulin yet, but now I'm in Chulin, I'm finishing Chulin. So I'm heading towards my second Siyum Shas. At my pace, it's nothing to do with the Daf Yomi. But anyway, so Y.U. Musmach, a tremendous brain, I don't want to mention his name obviously, PhD in his field, very bright. Looks at the Gemara I'm learning. Maybe it was Menachat, the Tzvachim. Says, what are you learning this? You're learning that? What are you learning it for? And I never opened up. It's not practical. Says, all right, I understand Nashim, Nezikin. I couldn't believe my ears. And he's older than I am. I knew his father, Zichron Levracha. I know his brother. So I told him, look, Shas is Shas. You got to know it, whether it's practical or not practical. Now, of course, what I'm referring to is halacha. Only halacha that's noheged bizman hazeh, or do we also paskin hilchata the meshichata? And you know, there's a tremendous difference on this topic. Does the Rif deal with hilchata the meshichata? Absolutely not. Does the Rambam deal with hilchata the meshichata? No. Absolutely. Lubavitch, all of their words on Mashiach, Chezkat Mashiach, who is Mashiach, what is Mashiach, it's all based upon the Rambam, Hilchot Malachim. Kodshim, Tarot, the Shulchan Aruch, no Hilchot the Mashiachot. No, absolutely not. So you see, Sifrei Psak developed. Sifrei Psak became very important. Sifrei Psak, every year, every month, something new is coming out. I'll mention it later in class. You can get there. But three tremendous subdivisions here. One, how do you give a psak? With all the shaklim in Taya, and the classic example, the rift, the rush. Or no, flat, to the point, the classic example, Maimonides. To a lesser degree, Shulchan Aruch. Two, what order do you follow? The Bahag, Seder and Shas? The rift, the rush? Or Labriyat, your own unique development? Putting it into a systematic framework, like the Rambam. Like the Shulchan Aruch. Third, Hilchata, the Meshichata, or only Halacha Hanoheget Bizman Hazeh. The Rambam is the classic example, the most striking example. Hilchata, the Meshichata, as well. Many decades after the Rif, you all know that the Chafetz Chaim filled in Ke'ein the riff on Kabbanot Nehilchata the Meshichata, the Likutim that the Chafetz Chaim published. But three tremendous differences. Okay, what did we do today? I have a lot of freebies to start giving out. It piled up, as they say. What did we do today? Rakefet left off some steam on Inyana Diyoma. You can agree with me or disagree. But at least think about what I said. I've never lived through such a terrible Chilul Hashem. I don't even want to go further, but wow. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable that the Satmar Rebbe should attack the Dosa Rebbe. We're talking about today. This is today's news. One of the Satmar Rebbeim. Rakevet also expressed appreciation for all the Nechama. My mother should be a gute beta phones and so sie haben a lichtige Ganeden Hareni Kaparat Mishkava. We spoke about essentially the Shiltat Mada versus Torah. It's a fascinating topic. Take out a hamik she'ela and compare it with Professor Mirsky Shiltat. You'll get a feeling of what I'm talking about. And this question has to continue to haunt us. Think of the Huntington Rambam and compare it to Frankel and Divrei Achronim. Hilchat Gedolot, we went into depth, the introduction and the Tayak Mitzvot, and then of course into modernity, three differences in Sifrei Psak. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we come to the Rambam, and then we come to the Shulchan Aruch, and the world will shake. Tomorrow's shir, Be'ezrat Hashem, will be the single finest shir I have ever given or will ever give. Please pass the 9 o'clock tomorrow. Please pass the freebies to me, and the Yogi Berra thing. It's all up for grabs. Yitzchak, this is for you, the Rav Asher Weiss. Does anyone want a copy of Shomer Amunim? This is how the Rabbalis begin. This is their Bible. But only it's an interesting volume. This is Chabad on a very high level, Mayanot. This is normal Chabad of Yoel Cohn. Does anyone want this book on anyone in art? It's biblical Jewish art from various museums and shuls around the world. It's a beautiful book, but I don't have room for it anymore. Anyone want the latest Jewish action? This is very, very sad with the economic problems. Finally, these are CDs given to me by a Talmud. I heard it once years ago. I heard it garnished. That's a gimmick. It gives you an idea of what radio was like before there was television, before there was... It's not vulgar, by the way. It's not vulgar. It's not pornographic. This was a different world then. If anyone is interested, it's based upon Yogi Berra, but Yogi Berra is not really the individual there. It's, they put together what they have. I want to say thank you all for coming. We meet again in health and happiness. Das Bedanya.
You've got to say that one thing. That you